is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hope everybody's having a great Sunday morning as we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Hour 2 coming at you live from Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, our guy Michael Lombardi out east in Jersey. And Hour 1, if you missed any of it, covered just about every angle you can imagine of the Nuggets Heat series in Game 2 coming up later tonight. We'll revisit that in just a little bit, about a half an hour, when Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City, joins the show, gives some final thoughts at the end of the hour as well. But Michael, believe it or not, despite all of the NBA talk we've had today, this is an NFL program, so let's get into a National Football League
talk. And the NBA season never ends. It doesn't end. I mean, like Vic said, I mean, we've got, you know, you couldn't wait to get over to the window to bet the Broncos on the over 8.5. I could see it, right?
Listen, I mean, I told you.
Vic gave us.
Go ahead.
Well, I thought he gave us good insight into what's going on there. And as bettors, we have to take the information that we get and parlay it back out. Like, we know this. I mean, what is fact or fiction? Mm-hmm. Sean Payton's a better head coach than Nathaniel Hackett. That's just a fact, right? We know that. Vance Joseph being embraced by the players certainly makes that more impactful. And then adding Sean Payton, you know, this is a team that we've all felt like was close to winning if they could get the quarterback straightened mm-hmm. out. And Russell didn't play well, but I think Vic's point was they were in a lot of close games that Nathaniel Hackett kind of made the mistakes in those games to cause them to lose.
They were. And you think back to the preseason a year ago, the expectations were sky high for the Denver Broncos getting Russell Wilson for a lot of reasons why they're so high this year as well. But now you have the correct, I mean, you would think, at least on the surface, the correct coach, somebody that can really turn things around. And I told you in the commercial break earlier after our discussion with Vic, I'm higher than most people on the Broncos over the Chargers in the division. I think that it's still the Chiefs to lose, but as you kind of put together your hierarchy of the AFC West, I prefer the Broncos and what they're putting together over what I've seen from the Chargers. The Chargers always have high expectations and let you down.
Yeah, they do. And you know, look, this Bronco team, when Vic was the head coach, Fangio, they were good defensively. Now, you know, they don't have Bradley Chubb. They don't have Von Miller, some of those players that were part of that defense. And we'll see what Vance Joseph can create with this defensive scheme that he has. But, you know, he signed Zach Allen in the offseason, who was with him at Arizona. You know, they lost the Dermonte Jones, who was one of their better players. That's going to affect them. But they do have good corners. We know Patrick Surtain can cover. Justin Simmons, to me, is one of the best free safeties in football. So I think there's a lot to like about this Denver team. And if we can get Russell from not making the bad plays and turning the ball over, I think there is a chance. I think critically for us this summer is going to be when Russell plays, if he plays at all, what's his eye level like? Will he throw the ball up the field or is he just going to take checkdowns? I think that was the one area that concerned me watching him play last year, along with his inability to escape any pass rush because he had no quickness like he used to earlier in his career.
Yeah, and we'll see if him shedding a little bit of the weight helps him with that quickness. And I was so frustrated week in and week out watching how poor they were in the red zone. So another critical area for them here in 2023.
They didn't practice, Stormy. I mean, I do Vic show all through the summer and during football season. And their complaint to me always was, you know, they don't practice. I mean, do you remember they went into Buffalo in a preseason game? I think they got beat was ugly from start to finish. And so there was no preparation. I mean, Nathaniel Hackett came from the Matt LaFleur, Sean McVay school of let's just get him healthy and we'll be good in the opener. That isn't Sean Payton's school. Sean Payton's from the Parcells mm-hmm. school. We are going to practice football to get better at football.
Well, speaking of Buffalo, feels like a good segue. One of the lone hard news items I feel like we had this weekend when it comes to the National Football League involved the Buffalo Bills finally having a defensive tackle under contract beyond 2023. They lock up Ed Oliver, 4 years, $68 million, the extension with $45 million guaranteed, former ninth overall pick. He's coming off a bit of a mixed season, got injured in the season opener last year, played only 13 games, but when he's good, he's pretty good. What'd you make of the extension?
Well, I think this is an easier extension to do because we've seen a lot of interior defensive linemen get signed, right? We, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, Payne, Lawrence, Hargrave. You know, we have Leonard Williams' contract. So it was kind of there's a lot of numbers. I don't think Ed Oliver's to that level. And the contract, to me, based on the guarantee, is reflective that the Bills didn't think he was at that level. I don't think they made him the highest-paid defensive tackle. But I do feel like he is an effective player. The problem with Ed Oliver coming out in the draft and the problem with Ed Oliver today is, can he play 17 games, 60 minutes? He's an undersized tackle that probably is better when he could just use his role in nickel and play three technique or just – but with the pounding of the season – the double teams getting pushed around, it wears on him and it takes away what he's most effective at, which is his quickness and pass rushing.
And because of that, we heard Brandon Bean back in March talk about Oliver's season, said he wasn't himself. Quote, I think you have to weigh, when did you think he was healthy and what did he look like and how did that affect the whole group? Because he definitely didn't have the production that he wanted, but how much of that was affected by playing at 80% versus being 100? So if he can be 100% on a more regular basis, he's a different player.
You know, it's funny. I was saying this all through the NBA playoffs about Julius Randle, about how I felt like he was playing, but he was really hurt. And our image of, the worldwide leaders killing Randle because he wasn't playing well. Well, he's hurt. It's the same thing with Ed Oliver. You know, we tend to, I can remember one year, you know, the great Logan Mankins, the offensive guard for the Patriots, was playing. And he was bad. And I had a conversation with Belichick, and I said, boy, Mankins looks like his career is over. Come to find out, after the season, you know, he's playing with a partially torn ACL.
Yeah.
You know, so it was really, you know, so if you don't know if a great player is not playing great and it's not because of age, there's probably another reason.
Well, and another player on that Buffalo Bills defense coming off of injury, Von Miller, he said to the media he feels he's going to be ready for the opener against the Jets on Monday Night Football. His quote, it's me, it's Von. I love guarantees. I want to play. He'll be 10 and a half months removed from the injury officially as of that September 11th date. He recalled back in 2013 going through this process with the ACL, said that he feels really comfortable knowing the benchmarks that he and his body needs to reach at certain times. He feels great right now, and he thinks he's on track to do that. Bills, a 1.5-point favorite at the Jets for that Monday Night Football game.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's interesting how, you know, the market, I think that market shifted a little bit too, didn't it? I think it came down. Weren't the Bills a 3? And I think it's moved to this number. But look, Von Miller, we have to understand something. Guys coming off an ACL, guys that are older, are always going to have a little bit of a challenge in terms of coming right back. Are they going to be healthy enough to be there? Can they play to the same level that they played the year before? I think that's going to be really critical for Von Miller. Can he do those things that he once did? When he signed, when he went to the Rams and then he came back and he signed this huge deal, I was really taken back by the length of the deal because I thought at age 33, now soon to become 34, that, you know, this isn't going to be able to turn it on. And just watching him in Buffalo, you know, he had 12 quarterback hits last year. You know, he was able to put some pressure in the 11 games that he played. And I thought, to me, with the 8 sacks, he was a little bit better than I expected. Now, coming off the ACL at 34, how's this all going to work out? I think it's going to be a challenge. I think it will be. They need him. Let's face it, they need him. We saw it against Cincinnati. They, as much emphasis as they put in drafting outside rushers, you know, Rosario and all the guys that they've drafted, they haven't really been able to hit with that position.
You mentioned the 8 sacks, 21 tackles, and a forced fumble in those 11 games before he suffered the injury on Thanksgiving against the Detroit Lions, which coincidentally, because we were just talking about Ed Oliver, that was his best game of the entire season. Had a forced fumble, a fumble recovery, a safety, 6 tackles, 2 TFLs, and a sack. So good day for Ed Oliver on Vaughn's.
Yeah.
On Vaughn's worst. So like I mentioned, so that's one of the big week one games, Monday Night Football on primetime. But there are a lot.
Taking? Who are you taking in that game?
Listen,
are you betting that one? Are you taking the Jets?
Doing them
are you
yet.
Going down that road?
I'm not going there yet. I still have a lot. I have a lot to marinate on still when it comes to week one. But whereas I'm taking a step back here, Michael, a lot of people are getting in and betting some of these games. One of the most bet in terms of ticket and handle is that Thursday night game to kick off the season, Chiefs-Lions. Lots of people taking the plus 6.5. It's actually down from 7 to 6.5 because of it.
Yeah, I see a bunch of 6.5s out there. Still some 7s, so if you want to shop it. But, you know, this is a perception move. Like, I got to see Detroit's defense this summer before I get carried away with it. Like, I think this Bengals-Browns game is going to be fascinating. I just know the way the Bengals operate in the offseason, they're not a great opening day team. Remember, Pittsburgh went in there last year. Pittsburgh with Mitchell Trubisky, I think they had 155 yards of total offense. Cincinnati turned the ball over 5 times. You know, the 49ers are going to walk into a hornet's nest in Pittsburgh. I'm just telling you, I know you're a Niner fan, but that's going to be a hard game for them in Pittsburgh. So because Pittsburgh, Mike Tomlin will have that team ready. I think the Browns as a home dog is a nice play here. Really, I do, because just understanding week one is not about who's the more talented team. Week one is about what team is really ready to play the best football with pad level and physicality. And if you don't practice that like Cincinnati does it in the summer, or the Rams don't, or the Green Bay doesn't, I think it gives you an advantage.
Yeah, and speaking of that 49ers-Steelers game, we remember the 49ers, of course, losing week one a year ago. Now they've got questions at quarterback again for the second straight year to start off the season.
Oh, but Trey Lance is sensational. Come on, he's better. He's absolutely sensational.
Hey, we'll
did you see the video?
I did.
We'll talk on the break, but somebody sent me the video of him going through the bags. Oh, my God.
I did.
Please stop.
We'll talk Buzz Lightyears when it comes to coaches next. But as for that number with the Steelers, they won at Cincinnati week one last year in overtime 23-20 as well. So week one's been good for the Steelers, bad for San Francisco, bad for Cincinnati. We got to take a break, but yeah, light years coming up next. Your fave.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into the Lombardi Line. Remember, everybody, you gotta download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and more. You can download the app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID. Open up an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're gonna love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Problem, call 1-800-522-4700. And Michael, I just rewatched the Trey Lance clip again. I think that your Twitter pops up in my algorithm like it's nobody's business, because yes, I saw that clip pretty immediately. A beautiful throw from my quarterback. God.
Well, you know, everybody looks at the throw, but actually, to me, the more disturbing part of that video is his lack of foot quickness going through the bags. Yeah. You know, that's the one area where I think, to me, if Bill Walsh came back down and watched that, that would really bother Walsh. Walsh was a big believer in the foot quickness tied to the arm. And when I watched that, the reason he's doing that drill is to marry his arm to his feet, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to move around and throw. And that's the whole reason for the drill. And so anybody can determine the result. It was horrendous. However, understanding the drill and what the drill is trying to emphasize causes more concern for you, because he just doesn't seem to instinctively have that ability to tie his feet with his arm. It's a boxer mentality, right? You've got to be able to move your feet and punch, move your feet and punch. That was why Walsh was so into boxers. And in this video, it demonstrates that he really doesn't have those things linked together, in spite of what your general manager, John Lynch, is trying to convince us that he has.
Yeah, and well, that's the thing, is all of the reports that I've been reading is that, like, one of the big priorities for him this offseason has been the footwork, has been the quickness there, especially coming off of the ankle injury. So not, you know, the stamp of approval I was necessarily looking for coming out of these camps, but it is what it is. But if anybody else on Twitter will tell you, or John Lynch or Kyle Shanahan, franchise quarterback and light years ahead of where we thought he would be at this time. And I know yesterday you and Femi got into a lot of those young quarterbacks and the reports.
Yeah.
Everybody loves that, right? Buzz Lightyear, up, up, and away. Now that's what everybody's doing. But yeah. I think the same thing pertains to coaches, though, right? And there are a lot of these young coaches that have high expectations. And are they going to take the jump that they need to take? And a lot of positive things going on. So let's talk about some of these younger coaches and coaches that are in their first or second years with their respective teams and see what you think they need to improve on this season or if they're in a good place. And maybe let's start with a former 49ers assistant coach in Mike McDaniel, who's the head man with the Miami Dolphins. They go 9-8 a season ago, but were 8-3 at one point before the season was really derailed with the recurring Tua Tagovailoa injuries. They lose in the postseason at Buffalo. But your expectations for Mike McDaniel and things that he needs to take steps forward in this year?
Well, I think Mike McDaniel needs to understand he is the head coach. He's just not the offensive play caller. And I think Vic Fangio being on his staff is going to remind him of that. When he does some of these dumb things that he did last year in terms of how he approaches what he's doing, it's going to affect Vic, and Vic is not a quiet guy. Vic's going to express his concern. So, look, the reason Mike McDaniel got the job was because of his ability to run the football. I think he needs to have more balance in his attack, particularly considering the weakness of his football team is his offensive line and his quarterback's ability to stay healthy and not get hit. So every time he's trying to put the quarterback in a position, there almost seems to be this sense of urgency to prove everybody that Tua is great. And just let Tua be the distributor and the point guard. Don't try to prove the point. And I think that's going to be really critical. And his ability to make in-game decisions is also going to be critical. It's one thing to be aggressive. It's another thing to be stupid. And I think that's got to be the thing Mike McDaniel. Look, Mike McDaniel is never going to be the CEO of the team. Mike McDaniel's personality is never going to be the true leader of the team. He's a play caller, right? He's kind of a hermit play caller. Vic Fangio's personality is probably going to have to distribute itself more within this team than ever before. That was the challenge last year. It didn't happen.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but are you not doing your franchise quarterback a disservice by not running the ball and by not having an offensive line that can protect him? When that's the first thing that comes out of your mouth, knowing what we know about Tua Tagovailoa, that's problematic.
Yeah, it is problematic. But, you know, we are in a world where we're in a world where everything is a 7-on-7 game. So what's the answer to everybody's problems are, you know, we got to throw the ball. I mean, think about this, Stormy. They were 31st in the National Football League in rushing attempts last year. Now, this is a team, as you said before we started this block, they were 8-3. They were not playing from behind, right? They were 31st in rushing attempts. And they were 25th in rushing yards. There was no balance to what he did. And so the pressure was on the quarterback. You wonder why he got hit? Yeah, they had great numbers. I mean, they've got the great Tyreek Hill, and they've got Waddle. They've got great skill players. There's no question. However, you got to protect your quarterback. But you also have to protect your defense, right? The defense's struggles when it's out there all the time and they're playing all that defense. I mean, what people don't realize about their defense, they were 25th in the National Football League in allowing touchdown passes. So you've got to play complimentary, but what happens because you're Mike McDaniel and you're really just the offensive coordinator, you're not a head coach, you don't care about anything. You call the game like an offensive coordinator. And if you don't link the two elements together and make three things into one, it's very challenging.
I'm almost scared to bring up this next team to you because I know how fiery you and Femi are going back and forth talking about Justin Fields, but Matt Eberflus coming off a 3-14 season, Justin Fields entering year 3 in the league, the expectations to make that Jalen Hurts-esque type of a jump. What does his head coach need to do here?
Well, I'm not a huge believer in the Matt Eberflus scheme. I think it's too high schoolish. I think it's too easy. And if it doesn't have great talent, you can really exploit it. Last year, they were 31st in yards and points allowed, 29th. I mean, there wasn't one category they were any good in. You know, teams could run the ball on them. Teams could throw the ball on them. Teams could basically do whatever they wanted to do. You know, even though their numbers in the passing yards were good, I think they ranked 17th in passing yards allowed. They were the worst team in terms of yards per attempt allowed against them. So teams didn't have to throw it as much against them. And so for me, I think if Matt's going to take this approach of being the CEO, he's going to have to understand his team completely. And he's going to have to change and modify on a week-to-week basis how he operates in order to get himself the win, because his talent level isn't anywhere near where it needs to be to play the scheme he played in Indianapolis. It's very challenging. He's not fast enough on defense. He doesn't have elite pass rushers, and he doesn't have an elite defensive line. And then he's got to manage the quarterback, who obviously turns the ball over. In spite of his defense attorney, Femi, you know, the guy's been sacked 91 times. He's got 29, you know, fumbles over his career, 19 interceptions. I mean, he got to find a way to manage the quarterback.
And a top three QBR in the league the last five games of the season, Michael. I heard that conversation. You loved that.
Did you hear that? I mean, how about that one? You know, was his QBR? I mean, who's citing QBR? I mean,
that was of my day the other day, Michael. You're like, oh, yeah, QBR the last five games of the year. Awesome. Can't wait till that's an official stat.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. You know, I mean, I watch these QBR things. I mean, can I just give you here? I have it in front of me. Total offense, 248 game in Philly. Total offense, 208 against Buffalo. Total offense, 230 against Detroit. Total offense, 259. Let me give you the passing of this QBR that's so good. 91 yards passing, 129 yards passing, 30 yards passing, and 141 yards passing. And yet his QBR is getting better. Please. I mean, they barely had any game. I mean, they had one game all season last year, the Chicago Bears, of over 200 yards passing.
It's electric.
See, this is the problem we get into. There's this correlation and causation. Everybody just correlates that because he runs the ball, it's going to be the reason he improves. No. He has to prove he can throw the football.
It's a very big, important year for Justin Fields, no question. Win total set at 7.5 for the Bears, maybe a little lofty based on your thoughts.
Same with Matt Eberflus.
Yeah.
Big year for Matt Eberflus. He's got to show that he can improve the team. Again, it comes down to what are we good at doing and what can't we do? And last year, the Chicago Bears, which is shocking that they're ahead of the Packers in terms of the North in betting odds, because the Packers are the better team. I don't understand how Chicago has gotten elevated as a really good team where they were last year. When you look at where they were defensively in all those areas, I don't get it.
With Jordan Love taking over at quarterback, I feel like that's all the narrative is we've even heard it from Bakhtiari, right? Like, we are a real rebuilding team, but you have a lot of the same pieces that you had before. You just have a young starting quarterback trying to figure things out.
You're trying to learn about your quarterback. Your team's pretty good. I mean, you got a lot of young players on offense, granted, and they're going to have to come through. But if the quarterback's good, you got a chance to be good.
Yeah, and if those young players, especially the wide receiver weapons, take steps from year one to year two, I think there's even more reason for optimism. We have to take a break. That music always telling me to shut up. We got Thomas Gable, our guy TG, coming up from the Borgata. Next, give us the book's reaction to NBA Finals, where the money is going in Game 2, the Stanley Cup, the Memorial Tournament, closing things out on a Sunday. So much good stuff ahead on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page, where you can sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check out the top VSiN experts leaderboard. We've got betting records, profit, and ROI, so you can see which VSiN expert has the high hand for VSiN Pro Picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now. Great offer. $9.99. VSiN.com/subscribe. Rolling along here on the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Time to welcome in friend of the family over here, our guy Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City, taking us behind the counter. Thomas, how are you today? Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday to you. I'm sure you're in a great mood, Stormy, after last night.
How'd you know? Yeah. The spirits are high over here. Yeah, it was a great night for the Golden Knights, though. I'm curious how things panned out on your side of things for the result. 5-2, Golden Knights getting things done in Game 1, and then the adjustment now for the series.
Yeah, we actually did okay on the game. It was good two-way action leading up to the game. And yesterday, we took some more Knights money there, did move 5 cents. We talked about it on the show yesterday. on the East Coast, you could obviously get a much cheaper price on the night than you could probably in town in Las Vegas last night. But, yeah, we made out okay on the game. The one thing I will say, the Knights were in so many parlays yesterday, but it was all right. Decent result for us there with the game. And as you said, now the series price has been adjusted. And there's also been an adjustment here for game two. The Knights are a bigger favorite, opened a bigger favorite for game two. The Panthers just looked frustrated throughout last night. And it was one of those things where it was kind of odd to see that in a game one, but they just looked sort of out of sorts, I guess, more than anything. We said yesterday on the show, you know, the Knights defense, the size of the Knights defense could certainly slow them down. And, you know, it was a great effort overall by the Golden Knights.
Yeah, we were partying here. I don't know if you heard Stormy's celebration, Thomas, but she was partying.
It could be heard cross-country.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's your handicap going into game two?
Well, I think right now we've seen some early Knights money. We've also seen people coming in this morning and even last night after the game was over, betting the Knights to win the cup. So Knights money is starting to roll here.
And you might have called it an odd performance from the Florida Panthers. I call it beautiful. I loved everything that I saw out there after the opening 10 minutes. So nothing to complain about over here. And certainly hope that it's only up from here for the Vegas Golden Knights as they can continue the search for their first Stanley Cup in franchise history. We have another team looking for their first, but in the NBA Finals, the Denver Nuggets, who have just seemed like their ceiling is higher than everybody else and their floor is higher than everybody else, especially based on what we saw there game one against the Miami Heat. A similar number here in game two in terms of the spread with the 8.5. The total a little bit lower, but are you seeing people buy in on the over because of that early adjustment?
Yes. The over, and it's starting to creep back up here now. So you're starting to see 216s. Which is higher than where we were yesterday for the total. But yeah, certainly the over has been the more popular play here. And when you look at what happened there in game one, the Heat missed a lot of open shots. You know, Coach Malone for Denver said yesterday, he watched the tape and Miami was 5 of 16 on open threes, but it was problematic for Denver that they allowed 16 wide open threes. I could say this might be coach speak, but Malone seemed genuinely unhappy with how the Nuggets played in game one. You know, he said their pick and roll defense was poor. They let Miami grab 11 offensive rebounds. Now, we know Miami will be more aggressive in getting to the basket. You shouldn't expect the same free throw disparity that you did in game one, where Miami only had 2 free throw attempts. But when you look at Miami, this isn't a team, though, that even during the regular season takes a ton of shots at the rim. So seeing them get more aggressive and today, I think it's kind of goes a little bit against their grain of what we've seen from them throughout the entire season. Obviously the size difference was a big deal in game one. You saw it right from the start with Aaron Gordon. He was getting fed the ball over and over, scored 10 of Denver's first 20 points on Thursday. He finished with 16, but defensively, he drew the Jimmy Butler assignment for a decent amount of time, and Butler didn't do much when Gordon was guarding him. And I don't mean just scoring. Butler only had 4 attempts when Gordon was on him. Butler just didn't challenge him. And I think that was really due to the size and the length that Gordon has there defensively over Butler. So we know, based on Jimmy's comments after the game, he's going to try to take on some more of the workload offensively. Obviously, they had some poor shooting from three that, you know, we don't expect necessarily to be as poor in game two. So I think, again, that's probably why you're seeing the market adjust here and that total start to creep up to 216. Right now, I wouldn't be surprised if you see it go to 216.5, 217 before game time tonight.
Yeah, I agree. TG, you were all over the first half being Denver in the first half, and that cashed well. What do you think about Miami in the first half in this game?
I think it's going to be a play where if you believe Miami can not only come out more aggressively, which is probably going to be their game plan, but execute efficiently, then yes, you know, you take the 4.5 right now with the Heat in the first half. But, you know, the question is going to be, is that execution going to be there? Will they be making the shots that they were missing on Thursday night? Will Butler be able to get to the rim more? That's really, I think, what this whole series comes down to, and how you bet this game is really, can the Heat execute against this size and length of the Denver defense?
Going to be a great game coming up tonight. We also have golf on our television today. Yesterday, an interesting day at the Memorial Tournament out there in Dublin, Ohio. Rory McIlroy fired a 2-under 70 to get to 6-under par for the weekend. Takes a co-lead with David Lipsky and Siwoo King. But trying to make it even more interesting, coming into today, 38 other golfers, TG, start the day within 5 of that 6-under lead. So how are people approaching this final day of the Memorial Tournament?
Yeah, this tournament is wide open. So McIlroy obviously is the betting favorite heading into it, even though he's in a three-way tie there with Siwoo Kim and Lipsky. But, you know, McIlroy is a good result for us overall. But, I mean, you have a lot of big names that are hanging right outside there. Hovland is only one back at 5-under. You have Keegan Bradley, Morikawa, Cantlay at 4-under. Matsuyama's at 4-under. And even when you go even 3 shots back, somebody could go low. This course here, Muirfield Village here, that Jack designed, when you go back and look at the history, this tournament has always attracted big names because it's Jack's tournament. But the course itself, it kind of goes back to the way that maybe it's even been a knock against Nicholas for his design career, where he kind of designs courses that seem to fit him and fit his game. And Muirfield's no different because he took a lot of inspiration from Augusta National. So we know McIlroy's history at Augusta, hasn't won it, but he certainly is capable of going low. And McIlroy can play this course with the best of them. So I think it suits McIlroy well, but it also, you have so many guys there that have the potential to go low and could make this really, really interesting.
TG, we're 2 weeks away from the U.S. Open at the Los Angeles Country Club. Do you have any early favorites outside of the obvious, the John Rahms and the Scottie Schefflers? Is this course going to be set up where, like most U.S. Opens, the rough is impossible once you get in there, tip like the PGA was in Rochester?
So it's not going to be necessarily as traditional of a setup as we've seen from the USGA for U.S. Opens. The fairways are going to be a lot wider than what you typically find on U.S. Open courses. This is not a course that is in that traditional U.S. Open rotation. So this comes along the lines of like a Marion or one of those older courses with a lot of history, but just doesn't seem to get into the rotation of the U.S. Opens like the Oakmont and so forth. So I think you're not going to see the rough is not going to be nearly as dangerous as other U.S. Opens. Again, the fairways are a lot wider. So, again, if you're looking for players, potentially, it's going to be guys who are longer off the tee. Accuracy is not going to be at the premium that you typically see in a U.S. Open. But, you know, again, looking at the odds boards, you know, it's the usual suspects at the top, Scheffler and Rahm. Those guys and McIlroy right there.
Thanks, TG, and thanks for giving me another lap of victory today with the Golden Knights. You're the best.
Of course. Girl,
yeah.
Of course. You got a couple
Listen,
more to go.
Yeah, I don't get this often, okay? Let me have this. We're gonna
enjoy it, Stormy. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, sir. We have a quick timeout here, wrapping things up with final thoughts on Game 2 of the NBA Final tonight.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Plus, if you're planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert BetMGM points into MGM rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip or nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions do apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you, though, to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Fun fact, Michael, for people who don't work in the television industry that I find very fun, maybe that's too much of a word for it, but that on these reads, when it says like MGM.com, it actually writes out the word dot, D-O-T-C-O-M. Like, it makes sure that you understand the proper way to read a website URL.
Well, you might
miss
it. Yeah, you don't want to say MGM period com, you know, I mean, so you don't want to make sure it's a dot, right? It's not a period, it's a dot. I mean, it's just making life easier for you, Stormy. That's what we're all about here, right?
I need to get some more like phonetic spellings sent my way. That way we're doing a better job at pronouncing people's names, because that's,
you know, I need that too.
I need that too.
I need that badly.
Especially, you know, I love hockey. Some of the names in that sport are, whew.
Oh,
sweet
boy.
Mama.
They're challenging. Baseball, too. Baseball's hard, too, sometimes. You get into that area. But, you know, and I apologize for butchering names, but sometimes it just doesn't come off my tongue as easily as it should.
Well, and with a lot of baseball players, too, since we're two people that don't follow baseball as much, if they're lesser-known players, that makes it even more difficult. And you're just like, somebody help me. But neither here nor there. We're on the right track here today, which I love to see. And we're wrapping up the show, getting into a little bit more of the ways that we can bet this NBA Finals Game 2 between the Miami Heat and Denver Nuggets in Ball Arena tonight, back in Denver. And let's start things off, actually, with our pro tip of the hour. We do these every single show. Every show at the network actually does. Just tips to help make y'all more informed bettors. And this one comes with regard to Game 2 specifically. Michael, you teed this up perfectly with the thought process that the Heat are likely going to come into this game a little bit more aggressive, better adjusted to the altitude. That, hey, like it could be worth a look to take Miami in the first half or the first quarter or some of these early ways to bet in on that aggressiveness.
Well, I mean, look, we're when you're a bettor and you do this more than recreationally, like we try to help people do here at VSiN, is you have to take information and take that information and correlate it into knowledge or a betting principle. And when I heard Spoelstra talk about the urgency to play faster, to play better in the first half, that's going to be his point of emphasis in his meetings. You know, he's probably talked about it Friday, Saturday. That's what we got to start fast. We got to have good sets, you know, shoot, fire, you know, don't worry about, you know, missing a shot. Just keep making sure we get those open looks. We got to start. We got to put some pressure on Denver. We got to make it harder for them. I know that they cut it to 9 points in the second half, and then Denver was able to explode back up to 16. But I think when you take that information and then apply it to the betting, I'm not saying it's going to come true. I just think this logically, it makes sense. And when logic makes sense, it sometimes is a good bet.
And there are a bunch of different angles, too. So first quarter, you're getting Miami plus +3, first half plus +4.5. There's also different sports books to do the options that are maybe not a first to 10, but first to 10 is plus +135, first to 20 plus +155. So just, and again, pairing the aggressiveness with, as Thomas Gable pointed out, the execution as well, and the anticipation that they're going to be a lot more dialed in here in the second game of the series. And again, VSiN pro tips available at VSiN.com. You can search them by sport and by show. If you're looking for tips specifically from Michael, you can search it by his name there. Nice and easy at VSiN.com. The spread on the game for the full game, 8.5, same number that we saw in game one. The total around 215.5, 216 now. People getting in on that over since it opened up to 14.5, whereas game one saw 219. So a pretty significant adjustment there. People thinking that, hey, the poor shooting performance, not only from the Miami Heat, but the Denver Nuggets as well, probably going to turn around a little bit more in here. What about this prop for you, Michael? Nikola Jokic to go 7 of 8 now in terms of games with triple doubles. Him to have a triple double tonight is juiced all the way to minus -140 because he's been so consistent.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for him not to get one. He's such a great passer, you know, and he had 12, shot attempts in the last game, and what, he scored 27 yep. points, you know? So like, he doesn't even need the volume of shots. He just is able to do it. You know, the only thing is, and as Femi was patting himself on the back for the over 9.5 assist total throughout the entire show on Friday, and it carried into Saturday as well. But you know, it's hard. I mean, that would be the only area where you think maybe he doesn't get it, but he's such a great passer. The rebounding, because Porter's such a good rebounder and Gordon's such a good rebounder, it may be he doesn't achieve that, but that's why I think it's always a good play to play Jokic on an over bet. I think Vic Lombardi earlier in the show made a good point. Game twos have been hard mm-hmm. for Denver, going to Minnesota, you know, in all the series. And so even though they've been able to endure and fight through it, this will be a challenging game for them. And so, you know, our perception is that game one was so easy, this is going to get easier. Well, if you know anything about sports, easy becomes harder.
Mm-hmm. And when you are a team that feels like you got a little bit embarrassed too, I think that refuels a fire and makes you come out with a different type of energy. And if Jokic were to have that triple-double tonight, though, by the way, I thought this was an interesting note on ESPN Sports and Information, would join Magic Johnson and Wilt Chamberlain as the only players with consecutive triple-doubles in final series. That's wild to me to see that there have only been two players yeah. that have had back-to-back triple-doubles. And he's on a stretch in yeah. this postseason where he's had 9 and 6 of the last 7 games.
You know, when I watch Jokic, I always think of the great Bill Walton, because he was a great passer, right? And then we had George Karl on yesterday, and Karl talked about Jokic as a point guard, and he's a combination of Larry Bird and Irvin Magic Johnson. And it hit me, like, I keep seeing him as a center, but he's really not. He brings the ball up the court. He's a distributor. You know, he may not be dribble driving penetration like great point guards do, but he has such an ability to see everything on the court. And as Greg Popovich has often said, you can't double him if he knows where the doubles are coming. You have to sneak up on him, and that's a hard thing to do. So, look, this guy is the best player in the league. I don't think there's anybody who doubts that whatsoever. And his ability to play within the style of the game is really impressive. That's what great players do. And Carl made the point yesterday, and he's right. The game is slow for Jokic. I mean, great players have an ability to slow the game down. They see everything, and when they come off to the sideline, they tell you everything because it was in slow motion, whereas some guys are struggling to understand what happens, and this is what makes great players rise at a higher level.
Yeah, Jokic has been fantastic, and in addition to just being so great, it's the consistency that comes with it, too. It's a night-in and night-out basis. You know what you're going to get from your star player. Jimmy Butler on the other side with the Miami Heat is somebody that we know can break out and have an incredible performance and put the team on his back with his execution and his energy and his grit and passion. But he can also have a little bit of a dud. And he had a 13-point game in game one. If the Miami Heat are going to have success, their star player needs to play significantly better. And his prop tonight is set at 26.5. So the market certainly has a belief that he'll rebound and have a better performance tonight. What do you think of that number?
I think Aaron Gordon presents a huge problem for him because he's hard to, you know, it's a size matchup, right? You know, unless Jimmy's taking a lot of outside shots and it's hitting, you know, will he get to that number? And Jimmy's also a selfless basketball mm-hmm. player. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't pound the ball and disrupt the offense like other great players at times do. He's a distributor. I think this is a game, if Miami is covering, Gabe Vincent played well, Strus played well, Duncan Robinson played well, and Butler plays within himself. I would lean towards the under here, Stormy. I really would. I don't think it's a contrarian. I just think the size mm-hmm. of the Denver Nuggets, especially when he gets into the paint, and if they're calling this game tight, maybe he goes over because he'll get some free throws. If they're letting them play like they did in game one, I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah, Jimmy didn't even get one of the 2 free throw attempts. Awful. Which
right.
you just don't
horrible, right?
Yeah, you just don't anticipate to see, which again, why he made the point that he's going to try to drive to the basket more in this game. The last 30 seconds or so here, I'll give you one last either or, like we were doing earlier with the bettor's choice, because it is in reference to both of those star players. Jimmy Butler to record 10 plus assists or Nikola Jokic to record 40 plus points in a finals game. Both are 2-1 for one of those things to happen this series.
I would take Butler.
Okay.
I just don't see Jokic is trying to be the – I think Jokic just wants to play the game within himself. I don't think he's going to try to take over any game and score. I think they've got to get Jokic in foul trouble. They got to take the. They got to get him a little bit to where he gets. He sits on the bench for a while.
I think it'll be a fun one. Look forward to recapping it with you when we're back here on the Lombardi Line tomorrow. That's a wrap for us here. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Stormy.
Good luck, everybody.
Enjoy your Sunday, huh?
I will try my best. I mean, how could I not with what happened with the VGK? Back for game two tomorrow as well.